the history quiz where we laugh at the past to keep from weeping about the present. I'm your host, Phil Ahrensberg. I'm a history nerd with a passion for illuminating the darker crevices of the human story. I'm joined today by a panel as erudite as they are entertaining. Let's meet them now. First off, he might be J.D. Salinger's personal assistant. You don't know. Please welcome Neighborhood Curiosity, your pal and mine, Dan Love.
Thanks for joining us here, Dan. Yeah, thank you. I'd like to point out that due to the miracle of time zones, I'm 3 hours ahead of you. And from the future, I say, things are all right. It's okay. Well, thank you for that courageous post from the future.
And then next, we have got author, educator, and shitster, hail and well met, Heather Welpert-Gowron. How are you doing, Heather?
It's going well, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. Thanks for joining me here tonight.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, you guys know this, but for the folks just joining us, let me go over the format. It's really simple. I'll describe some strange event or person from history and then ask the panel questions about it. Delicious points will be awarded based on those answers, and the person with the highest score wins. Today's explorers on the wild frontier of time will be competing, as always, for bragging rights and a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's very excited about the cereal.
Yeah, it's serious.
It's a serious thing.
And you can choose whatever flavor of Captain Crunch you like. Peanut butter.
Does Captain Crunch have the fake marshmallows in it?
No, it does not.
No.
It does have crunch berries.
Crunch berries, that's right.
An oops, all berries.
Oh.
Which is,
All right.
Let's not walk away from that. Yeah, there you go.
Today's topic, on Her Majesty's Satanic Service.
Oh, boy.
This is a good one. Now, when I ask you to think of the ultimate British secret agent, debonair, educated, sophisticated, upper class, womanizing, and ruthless, what three-number moniker immediately comes to mind? That's right, it's 666.
Exactly.
Today's secret agent under scrutiny is none other than the great beast himself, the wickedest man alive, and on Her Majesty's Secret Service, Aleister Crowley.
Oh, boy.
What do you guys know about Aleister Crowley?
Both far too much and far too little.
Well, go into it, Dan.
Okay. Aleister Crowley, as far as I know, isn't he a member or a founding member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn or some craziness like that? Do what thou wilt is the whole of the law. He's banana boats everywhere you go. And I'm not going to go into this detail because you might, but we never know. Apparently had something to do, or the groups he had something to do with, had something to do with Jack Parsons, my favorite crazy person from history. So, oh boy, I'm excited.
Heather, how about you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have never heard of this person, and I can't wait. Hold on. I'm so sorry. What does he look? I have to see what he looks like. Let me just see.
I'm terribly sorry to cough into the microphone, but trust me, when you go looking, you're going to see.
He's terrifying. He's like Lurch.
Yeah.
Everything about him is just, we're in for an hour of absolute mayhem and delight, everyone.
Is he like Rasputin-esque?
Kind of.
Aleister
Crowley was an English occultist, ceremonial magician, poet, novelist, mountaineer, and painter. Mm-hmm. He was known as the wickedest man alive.
Right.
He was a major figure in early 20th century occultism, and has become something of a pop culture figure today. Ozzy Osbourne wrote a song about him called Mr. Crowley.
Mr. Crowley.
And in addition to all that, as we will soon see, mainly he was a spy.
Yeah.
But he was,
overlap with Houdini?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his heyday was in the 20s and 30s. He was part of these sort of naughty hellfire clubs and various secret societies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Buckle in, everybody.
I'm like, talks of the White Queen. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Let's begin with some biography.
All right.
Edward Aleister Crowley is born on October 12th in 1875. He is born to staunchly religious parents, Edward and Emily.
That'll do it every fucking time.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
From the very beginning, he had a strained relationship with his parents. It was, in fact, his mother who first described him as the Beast. which is a name that he kept and reveled in for his later occult adventures.
Yeah, she described him that way on a Christmas card. It was a very, very tense relationship.
In March of 1887, when Crowley was 11 years old, his father died of tongue cancer. Crowley described this as a turning point in his life. Beginning here, he embarked on a lifelong pursuit of rebelling against every tenet of his strict religious upbringing.
Can I just pause you for a second? Because I think my grandpa had tongue cancer. And I think we went to Art's Deli and we pureed a pastrami for him. And he sucked it out of with a straw. And that's he loved it. Sorry.
That is not going to be the weirdest thing we hear today.
By the way, I figured that. Right, I'm just saying, connection with tongue cancer, pastrami slurpee. Okay, there you go.
You have a moment.
You know, so from very early on, it seems like from the very beginning, despite the best efforts of his parents, he just felt this pull towards absolute rebellion. Sure. Apparently, he was absolutely brilliant, but all of his energy was focused into what could generously be called ideas of liberation, but he really wanted to do what he wanted to do and saw the structures around him as just invitations for destruction. He began misbehaving at school. This took the form of smoking, drinking, semi-public masturbation, and patronizing a seemingly endless string of sex workers. Tangentially.
Semi-public masturbation.
Yeah, this was a big thing.
Semi-public. It's chest up only, people, but we know what he's doing.
I'm thinking behind trees, right. Like behind rocks.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, or, you know, his classmates talk about it happening where he would just like walk into his room, leave the door open and go to.
There you go, everybody.
Classic right. Exhibitionism.
Yeah, okay, that's Crowley right there. That's Allie cool. All over the place.
Tangentially, he also became a world-class chess player and mountaineer. And all of this is before he leaves for college, right? This is like starting at age 11.
Right. This is like one of those English spanking boarding schools.
Exactly.
Like he's already doing stuff that would be enough for all of us. Like, yep, world chess champion, mountaineer, and frequent public masturbator, Aleister Crowley, everyone. Bring him on out. He's 11. Have a good time with this. Wear this as a hat.
I'm trying to put the dots together here, knowing nothing about this guy, right? That occultist and all this stuff. And all I can think about is like young Sherlock Holmes and like sure. The occultist stuff in there. And yeah. I'm like, how is he going to get there?
Yeah, it's very Byronic. Very. It's the whole deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
tell me.
So I'm going to go to you at this point. What are your predictions of Aleister Crowley as he heads off to college? What kind of student, and more importantly, what kind of roommate is he going to be?
Oh,
well, obviously, as a student, he's going to be just the serious of students, a severe academic who spends all of his time cramming the books into various areas and crevices. I can't imagine him being anything but just he's going to be a naturally gifted and terribly disgusting student. That's all I can think. And as far as a roommate goes, I don't even want to discuss what I know about his roommate. But there you go.
tell.
No, you'll get there all on your own. You don't need me to take you there. Dear God.
And Heather, you, any predictions?
Oh, any predictions? Oh, I feel like I'm so long for this ride. I'm a passenger in this ship. This is fantastic. I do have a question about him. How about that? Oh. What college did he go to, for one thing?
Ooh.
And was it a co-ed college? Or were there not co-ed colleges then? Like, when did that become a thing? Well, that's a whole other show. But anyway.
That's a whole other show.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, so this is Cambridge University at the end of the 19th century.
Sure.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
So this is literally Oxford Dons or Cambridge. Well, Cambridge Dons.
Oh, yeah.
Like the robes and the hats and, you know, do your Latin prep and everything else. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's all this. And then they take Dr. Captain Bananas, who spanks the monkey in public. Just run loose. There you go.
Oh, my gosh. My
Ladies
guess
and
is
gentlemen.
Not the craziest there, by the way, as it turns out. Maybe they put him on some kind of show where he has to, like, out-crazy someone from Oxford. Because, you know, exactly. They always had that little
They have a thing.
So you're saying this is like a university challenge, but for mental health.
University challenge. Who's the nuttiest one you can accept? Exactly.
Who is the craziest one you can pull in here?
Yep. Yep. They brought in some kind of cricket, you know, athlete and gave him a scholarship. They brought in Crawley as their creep scholarship athlete. Yep. Mm. Yep.
So let's find out.
Let's find out, shall we?
Cambridge University. This is where he adopts the name of Alistair over his born name of Edward. Crowley spent much of his time at university engaged in his pastimes. Again, those are chess, mountaineering, and weird sex. And it was really at this point that it was kind of the turning point, whether he was going to pursue whether he was going to pursue occult studies and kind of explore mysticism, you know, from a very intentional, you know, kind of place, right? I mean, yes, he indulged in all this stuff, but I guess it was very conscious hedonism.
Extracurricular.
He's not slipshod about this. He's got plans. Yeah. He's written things down. And I'm sure the chess and the hedonism probably take place at the same time. Well, along with mountain climbing.
That's the thing. It was at Cambridge at this point where he sort of decided whether he was going to be an occultist, a mountaineer, or devote his life to chess.
All right.
Oh.
And I'm going to say chess because that's the one that gets the most chicks.
That's funny you mentioned that.
Oh, no. What have I done?
Which is December of 1896, Crowley has his first mystical experience in Stockholm. And this changes the course of his life. Biographers, several of them, believe that this was the result of Crowley's first sexual experience.
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
The Mystic Knights.
I'm going to go to you again, panel. What about your college exploits? Which one of them would you describe as the most mystical experience?
The most mystical experience I had at college. I have to ponder that. I don't think I had a mystical experience.
I think you picked the wrong panel, man.
What are you talking about? I went to college with both of you.
I will say
I did not have the most mystical experience, but someone around me did, in the sense of, at the college we attended, there was an annual festival at the end of it where several people would imbibe. People who might not have had experience imbibing chemical substances would do so. And I, being the teetotaler I was in college, did not. And one of them had imbibed a great deal and came upon the festival. And when they did, it did not look, they were very, very off put by this. And it was scary and not fun. And in amongst this scary and not fun, they saw me sort of cut out and looking very normal. And that person came over and spent the rest of the day hiding behind me.
It wasn't me, was it?
That was not you. No, okay. That was someone else.
I think I know who you're talking about. And the way it was described to me, if I'm not mistaken, is that you were, like you say, the normal, like you were just the calm pillar in the storm for someone in that kind of mindset and state of mind.
And literally, I was sort of cut out of the
you're
weirdness.
You're like photoshopped in there.
Just me like, how you doing, kids? Yeah. Hey, by the way, the snakes eating the spiders and stuff are on our side, so don't worry too much about them. I know the floor's melting, but you can hang out with me and have a fresca. So apparently that worked well. That's the closest to a mystical experience I had while in college. But then again, I spent most of my time in college studying insects. So that's not something I would advise not to do that, kids. If you were asking about what to do in college, that is not it.
I was not.
Yeah, there you go. Most people were not. No.
All right. Well, Heather, do you have any mystical experiences from college you want to share?
Mystical experiences in college? No, but I did find myself for a time really fascinated with haunted universities. And I did a deep dive into the different universities around the world, in particular in New England, and kind of their role in urban legend and things like that. And like I found out, like my sister's college, Kenyon College, had doorways like attached to the Underground Railroad, and I think college is a really interesting time for so many people, that there are so many ghost stories set in colleges, and I found that particularly fascinating to me. And so when I was in college, and even when I got out of college, I ended up doing a real deep dive, set up phone lines for like USC and UCLA, and people would call in and I'd hear their ghost stories. And a lot of them like were from different generations and they meshed up and it was like creepy, but that was fun. That was just fun ghost story shit.
Well, let's get into some more fun ghost story shit, shall we?
Yeah, let's get into some ghost story shit. Wait, hold on.
This actually brings us to the end of round one.
All right.
Yep. And at the end of round one, let's take a look at the scores here.
I forget that there's this other layer to this.
Yeah, there's a scoring part.
We're being evaluated. Okay, God. Sorry.
Cotton gin.
At the end of round one, Dan currently leads Heather 16-9.
Oh, so let's there you move go.
Into round two.
Okay. Yeah. All
it's
right,
a real barn burner.
That's a scale of 2.5 to 104. So we don't know where we're going with this.
I'm not quite sure of the rubric, but I'm all for it. So let's go.
We're for it. We're yes. Continue on.
Let us move on now to round two and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
Yes, here we go. Yeah.
Not to be confused with.
Yeah,
I'm
so excited. There you go.
Right. Okay. Go on.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that any investigation into 20th century weirdness ends up at the HOGD.
Yeah.
It's very much the Costco of secret occult societies. Regardless of whatever other secret society one belonged to, you also belonged to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Their practices were a mashup of Renaissance alchemy and Hermetic mysticism. Their ideology was a grab bag of pseudo-ancient Egyptian mysticism and rituals.
Say that 10 times fast.
But basically, they thought that ancient secret knowledge would lead to a higher form of human society. A bunch of sort of upper-class utopian types. Their organizational structure was cribbed from the Freemason. There's a secret hierarchy of adepts gaining rank within the organization as they proceed up the levels of enlightenment. Again, their membership was mostly a bunch of fairly effete upper crust artists like Yeats and Bram Stoker, as well as some other less notable and affluent weirdos. What do you think the modern equivalent of something like that would be? Heather, let's start with you.
I may have to ask for a repeat because I found myself thinking about the Egyptian, that museum, damn it. I went to a museum. It was an occult museum. It was in like the Bay Area and it had thousands of mummies and it was Ben Franklin's cult. What the frick was it called? This is where my brain went while you were
Ben
talking.
Franklin, Ben Franklin's cult. It was famous for eating raisins.
And it wasn't Rastafarian. I kept saying to myself, Rastafarian, and that's not what it is.
No, that's
Rosicrucian.
Not it. The Rosicrucians. Yes.
Thank you. It was like a brain fart. I could not recall that word. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Ask me again.
What is the modern equivalent?
Go ahead. Ask me again.
What do you think the modern equivalent to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn would be?
I mean, Republicans. I don't know. I mean, it's like...
is MAGA the equivalent? Because that feels like a much more populist kind of thing. And
it's underground. Yeah, I got it. But
you know, very specifically, this is a group of, you know, kind of out there authors and artists and scientists. And then the rich people who may not have the creative talent, but have the interest in these sort of fringe ideas.
I mean, I can still kind of circling back to Republicans. I will just say that I'm just thinking about the you know, those secret societies from Yale and things like that, that, you know, so many of our politicians shared.
You got your Skull and Bones.
Yeah. Your Skull and Bones was one.
You I got your other ones. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There were two.
All right, the ones at Yale. Yeah. But Skull
all
and Bones.
At Yale, yeah. But there
Skull
were two
and Bones is
ones.
The big one you want to talk about there.
Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about, you know, questionable earned, you know, places of earned merit, you know, but places that were a little underground, things happened behind closed doors, different than what was being, you know, promoted mm-hmm. out there. That's where I'm going with.
And Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, because particularly in America, England, I don't know, because I live at home and don't ever travel anywhere. So I can only see what outside the window. But I think in America, we don't want to say we like aristocrats, but we do. Oh, we want aristocrats so much, but we can't have them because that'd be bad. So our aristocrats are all wealthy, dumb people.
Like the Kardashians, that kind of
Goop. Goop. And because I'm not fond of lawsuits, perhaps the Church of Appliantology and things like that, where like, oh, the secret knowledge, because it's really predicated a lot on I know something you don't know and you could learn it, but you got to come hang out with me. Now, the internet gets you a lot of that with your people on Facebook, like, you know, the earth is flat, or like electricity doesn't work, or there's no such thing as gravity, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But the real sort of hermetic order of the Golden Dawn is your sort of upper class. I am sure it's like that conference gets held out every year with the big owl statue out in the West Coast. Nixon called them fruity.
Not the Bilderbergs, but
no, not Bilderbergs. The other one. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh. Something Grove.
Yes. Yes. The Grove. But they're this group that gets together. So it's less sort of mysticism, more about money and power and being incredibly strange. Mm-hmm. Just being weird,
but the money
weird
and power
people.
Is attached to mysticism because of the entitled, like there's this mystical reason why it's here,
yes.
Right?
Yes, the reason I have this money is because, depending on who you are, some mystical woo-woo power gave me that money because I believed in the secret. And I wrote it down and I did my thing. So that's sort of it, because in America, we really, really don't want to have an aristocracy, except we do. And we want it to be us. And that's my thought. There's no hermetic order of the Golden Dawn, but there is. But they're not that sort of aristocrats hanging around in wood paneled halls. It's, you know, people on the internet hawking Alex Jones pills and things like that. It's sad. We've really stepped down. Our mystic weirdness is really taking something of a beating. And of course, a lot of that mystic weirdness is out in the public now. It used to be, you know, I stood out underneath I was sky clad under the rosy dawn with my chakras in view for everyone. Used to be, oh, that's crazy. And now people post about that on Instagram. So.
And that's kind of the thing. You sort of put your finger on it. And so I'll ask the question, what does any of this have to do with spies?
And that's where we're going. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to the spy part.
So the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was a gathering place for a gaggle of influential and rich weirdos and free thinkers. Outside of this gathering place, there was almost no chance of any of these people talking to each other, much less mashing together their views on art, philosophy, religion, and politics. And so the order drew in a number of adherents to various weird political movements that may or may not have, you know, sort of mystical overlaps, and put them in touch with basically people with money who share their beliefs. The main political movement in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was something called legitimism. It goes back, honestly, to the War of the Roses, Protestant versus Catholic stuff. This is a movement, and again, we're talking about, you know, 1905, 1907, modern times.
Right.
But the legitimists basically wanted to return the British monarchy to a pre-Tudor state. They wanted King James's bloodline to sit in the throne and wanted to return Britain to Roman Catholicism.
Exactly.
Do you think they had, like, at the turn of the century in 1900, do you think there was like a weird like building tizzy there where there was with like Y2K?
Oh, there was completely. Oh, yeah.
I think so. And I think also there was a major backlash to the Industrial Revolution that expressed itself in lots of secret societies and paranormal beliefs and conspiracy theories and all of these sort of capital R romantic ideas.
Yes. Your theosophists and all the rest of them, sort of all getting together with this kind of like, and of course coming up on 1900 because the forces that be like round numbers.
Right.
So anything. Oh yeah. This is going to be a huge magoo.
Right.
When in truth, no, but whatever. Sure. Believe whatever you want. Crazy rich weirdos. Considering you control a quarter of the planet, I guess you can do whatever you want.
the reason that these particular crazy rich weirdos mattered to Her Majesty's Secret Service is because this ideology favored Scottish and Irish independence. So they were sending a lot of money and guns to Belfast. And so British intelligence definitely wanted to get a mole in there to see what was actually going on and maybe see what kind of dirty tricks could be employed to bring these guys down. Exactly. So we go now again to you panel for a little question. How would you prepare to go undercover in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn? Let's start with you, Dan.
Well, I'd hate to say I'd have to start engaging in semi-public masturbation. I don't really want to go there. Obviously, you got to get your robes pressed. And you got to really got to shim-sham your shiny hat and everything. Because it's going to be nothing but... Because theoretically, what you got to do, if you're really going to get in there, is you got to work your way up the pyramid. So you can't be some, like, you know, second degree Scotch Rite Mason. No, no, son. You got to be, like, way up there and be going to all the secret meetings. Because that way, you know, and especially the real secret is, as far as I can figure out, is just to have some weird ass belief. You got to have something you've clung to that's like really bizarre, like fairies control the supply of eggs in Colchester or something like that.
You heard it here first, folks. Dan Love believes in fairies. Moving over to you, Heather. What's your undercover story?
Well, okay, so I have questions. So here's my question. Am I time traveling back? Like, can I bring something with me to infiltrate with something from now? Like, or do I have to infiltrate, like, as a prostitute or as a servant or like, or as they probably would allow women to? Do you know what I'm saying?
So, well, but here's the thing. This is also a group of, you know, they pride themselves on their progressive free thinking beliefs. So there were plenty of women in the
well, they ran the seances or something, right? Yeah, so okay. I would have to like bring some kind of device with me that they wouldn't understand, like David Blaine shit. You know what I mean? Like I could get away with some stuff that like they were like, so she's
freeze yourself in a block of ice.
Right.
Or you know, that weird foot levitation thing. You know, that would be enough, you know?
All you got to do is do that and seance enough, and everybody will believe you. You can make them do whatever you want.
And just high voice, like, that's it. That's nice. All you need to do. So I think I would have to go for the performance end of things versus the infiltrate as a spy end of things.
There you go.
Funny you mention that. Enter Aleister Crowley. So at this point, Aleister has started his own religion, philosophy, sex club.
Always a great guy to have at a party.
Yeah, sure, and yeah. I mean, Dan, you said it earlier, his catchphrase, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
There you go.
And it was this very kind of path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom, right? It's that kind of thing. And it has a bit of a mystical tradition. There have been mystical figures throughout history who, instead of becoming extra pure, they say, no, you know, I will reach enlightenment by experiencing everything that I'm not supposed to experience. And that's what Crowley brought to the Golden Dawn. He had sort of made a name for himself in occult circles through all of his transgressive behavior and apparently was incredibly charming and charismatic and bombastic. He was initiated into the order. Not long after that, he made contact and struck up a friendship with one Lord Burton Ashburton, who is a militant legitimist who ran training camps.
We have to say the word.
Lord Burton Ashburton.
Lord Ashburton was a militant legitimist who ran training camps for Irish and Scottish guerrillas. His grand scheme was to supply King Carlos of Spain with money and guns. And when Carlos won the monarchy, he would return the favor and sponsor uprisings in Scotland and Ireland.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt, but the way this plot involves King Carlos of Spain. Yeah, sure. Do that. That's awesome. That makes me so happy. What do we do? Spain.
Well, but at this point, Spain is still trying to, you know, kind of come out of the Enlightenment and join the rest of the modern world. Needless to say, the British intelligence was very interested in Lord Ashburton. Crowley worms his way into the order, and he does not do it subtly. He very flamboyantly and theatrically makes his presence known and seems to be doing all this mystical stuff, where the worming comes in is what he's doing for the British intelligence services.
Suddenly he's also really concerned about where all the money's going.
Well, he comes in there and he starts introducing a ton of taboo sex stuff into Golden Dawn rituals that were never there before.
Sure.
And he starts, you know, magician wars. I'm going to curse you. And I saw, you know, you conjuring this demon. And they respond in kind and they have
magician battles.
Yeah.
English fancy pants magician battles. I'm just picturing guys throwing rabbits out of hats at each other, but I know that's wrong. I know it's
bullshit expecto right. Patronum kind of
that's
stuff.
That's it. Right? Exactly. Right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Crowley is basically an agent of chaos. The Golden Dawn's occult underpinnings describe a league of magicians fighting for either the White Lodge or the Black Lodge. And Crowley starts flinging around accusations of black magic, of white lodgers secretly working for the Black Lodge, ginning up false information and paranoia, and pretty much the same thing a double agent on an espionage assignment would do.
There you go. He's a spy.
A shifter.
Exactly. there, gotcha.
Full circle.
You're okay. A spy in the house of whatever. I don't know.
That must be it.
And it all collapses like a souffle. Ashburton's support of King Carlos ends when someone, it was Crowley, tipped off the British intelligence to an enormous arms shipment. The raid, as well as the other internal strife fermented by Crowley, left the order in shambles and collapsing from within. And despite all of his mystical, you know, I am a fighter of truth and I bring the flaming sword and, you know, we'll go to the Golden Palace of Wisdom. Most likely he was more a spy acting like a magician rather than a magician who happened to have connections with spies.
Right. Yeah, see? He's a dirty, sneaky little man using his mumbo jumbo when in truth he's really just some guy spying for the British government. And from what I've seen, they're a dime a dozen. Everybody spies for the British government. Heck, I might have at one point.
Looking at his picture, like, this ain't no 007. Do you know what I mean? This
is- no. Well, I mean, but if you think about it, would you want your spies to be real handsome? You want your spies to kind of just be some dude. Like, your most effective spies are just some dude.
This now, is Crowley, the whole other side of the pendulum, though.
Yeah. Well.
But he is striking. I mean, look at his picture, and apparently, I mean, this was the thing. People talk about, like, being stunned into paralysis when they met eyes with him. And I think it was a combination of reputation meets natural charisma, and they just kept building and building and building on each other.
Plus, he has those googly eyes.
But it is interesting when people are born having rolled 20 on their charisma, whether they're good or bad people. Do you know what I mean? That's fascinating.
He absolutely did. Oh, completely.
And that brings us to the end of round two.
Oh, no.
Yes. So, let's take a look at the scores. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. There has been an upset.
Oh,
my goodness.
Have I lurched ahead?
Yeah, you have. You have. Heather now has 38 with Dan nipping at her heels with 33.
Wow. I really thought I was going to pull it out there when with my layup and my points from the floor. But, I'm
Lord Ashton. I'm never going to stop saying
Lord Ashton. I just liked an involved Spanish monarchy. Quick, get the Spanish monarchy involved. They'll know what to do. Sure. Okay. Why not? There you go.
Well, let us move on now
please to
our third and final round. Halloween 1914. The passenger liner Lusitania docks in New York and Aleister Crowley disembarks. He very quickly worms his way into the rather extensive network of German intelligence agents working in the city. Their goal is to keep America out of the war.
Okay.
Crowley's assignment from his superiors in intelligence, get the Americans into the war as quickly as possible. Crowley, based on nothing more than his own personal bombast, convinced the German propaganda machine in the U.S., that arrogance and the threat of violence were the best methods of keeping America out of World War I. He claimed that his occult powers gave him special insight into the mass psychology of the American people.
Of course he did.
My hoodoo lets me know.
Exactly. Quote, the Americans are like children, easily frightened and responsive to firmness.
Aren't we all responsive to firmness?
Yeah. Is this a way to keep America out of a war? Calling us chicken?
I don't know about early 20th century Americans, But I know current Americans, nah, that's not how we play. We're very big into bombing things from the sky. I have to admit, I don't know 1915 Americans and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'll say no. You call Americans a chicken, we show up and we start throwing hands.
But again, this whole thing with German intelligence in New York was this weird mix of occultism and politics, and occultism was his in.
Right.
His contact was a guy named George Sylvester Viereck, who was an occultist whose passions included drugs, orgies, and European politics. And yeah, I mean, it's this weird sort of what they call a soft opening to get into all these, you know, if you're into occultism, you know, you're probably have weird political views and maybe you're someone who works for the, you know, a government. At a March 1915 meeting with the propaganda cabinet, the circle of German officials and military intelligence officers stationed in the U.S., Crowley turned to the ocean liner Lusitania. The famous ship was a cruise liner that was well known to be ferrying military supplies from New York to Liverpool, and it was a very juicy military target. The problem was the hundreds of civilian passengers on board. Aleister Crowley advised German high command that the propaganda gains from sinking the Lusitania would far outweigh any negative publicity. And so, on the 7th of May, the Lusitania was sunk by a German submarine. Over 1,000 people died in the attack. It would take about a year and a half for the U.S. to join the war, but the German reputation in the U.S. was destroyed immediately. Public opinion, which was kind of neutral and would go kind of back and forth between the Allies and the Germans because of the large German population in the U.S. at the time, immediately turned aggressively anti-German. And American involvement in the war was pretty much inevitable.
Yeah.
That would happen.
Yeah, that's going to happen. That's his deal. Secret societies.
I love it.
Yeah. Secret societies allowed for these otherwise impossible combinations of weird thought, powerful people, and money that took place in absolute secrecy. You know, these were people whose influence.
The room where it happened.
I mean, kind of.
I mean,
Sons of Liberty were a secret society.
Mm-hmm. There are all these secret societies. They're never doing the stuff you kind of want. They're never about space aliens and stuff. It's always about like, yeah, I'm going to get the Lusitania sunk so we can start a war. Awesome. Well done.
Well, but I think it's interesting that you can start with, you know, White Lodge and Black Lodge and mystical aliens,
right,
and end up at let's sink the Lusitania.
Let's get involved in the Boer War. There you go. You know what we need to do in our Mexican peyote cult? Get the Boer War going. That's what we need to do. That's the clever thing we need to do.
Well, he was trying to not get it going.
He was trying to not get it going. That's the beauty of it.
But again,
the civilians pay the price.
What is his first job, right? Is he a magician or is he a spy?
Right. I think, from this conversation and others, I think the two cannot be separated. It's the same. It's the same sort of thing. It's the same sort of sleight of hand and working on people's psychology when they don't realize you are. It's that same sort of fake and look at this hand while this hand's doing the work.
They carry the same character traits, right? They require the same character traits. Like if you've got your wheelhouse in one, you've got your wheelhouse in another. And if you're sitting there trying to like make a career for oneself, you know, you're going to kind of make your list. What can I do? You know, and that's how you get there. I would pose that the politics part he stumbled on while he was in the mystical part, because the mystical part seems the stuff that people would find younger.
Well, you also have that British boarding school. Everybody here is going to wind up being a spy because we.
Well, that's the other thing is that
they all go into like, you know, because you have to know somebody to trust them enough. You know, I was with him in school, so I trust him enough that I don't think he'll go over to the
commies. Yeah, and this is very much a tradition in British intelligence that it comes from the upper classes. It comes from boarding school connections. Right. And the problem was that, you know, at least, you know, in the 50s. That half of those people in college were hardline communists, even though they became, you know, deputy head of MI5.
Right. And of course, the CIA was originally all Princeton people. So it's
what do we know about
Princeton
the parents people. Besides the religiousness of them, the religiosity?
They made their fortune in brewing, fairly well off.
back when you could do that kind of thing.
Yep. Crowley inherited all their money. It was not an extensive family, but it was a rich one.
Okay. And he need money to bankroll this weirdness.
And you know, he was very famous. I mean, he was a public figure.
Yeah.
He was appearing in newspapers, scandalizing society. Right. And so it was a very much hide in plain sight kind of intelligence operation.
I think it's absolutely magician and is it spy or is it provocateur? Who knows? But I do think Penn Jillette could probably start a land war if he really wanted to. You know, that kind of thing.
Where
you
may just, have for all we know.
What do I know? 100 years from now, we're going to find out. Yes, he was secretly meeting with Kissinger. I don't know how that would work.
Janice Pennington was a model on The Price is Right. And I think her husband turned out to be a spy, disappeared and died. And she spent the rest of her life kind of proving and looking for him.
And then there was a whole thing about Confessions of a Dangerous Mind by Chuck Barris, who claimed he was a contract assassin for the CIA.
Yes. And I totally believe that with all my heart.
I think what makes Crowley's case sort of makes it stand out for me is that this occult side requires a certain degree of magical thinking along with the espionage side of things, which requires so much very practical kind of thought.
Yes.
And I think once he recognized that he could play on people's beliefs, and these people 100% believe this occult, all this occultism.
Yes.
He could just come in and, you know, utilize his espionage skills to bring down these organizations again and again and again.
Yeah. To me, one of the questions about Crowley has always been, because if you look at his writing and everything else and all it's done, I did not know the limits of his spying, but I knew he had been involved in all sorts of strange things, is, of course, how much did he buy any of this? Because there's always sort of a wink behind everything he did, like, oh, yeah. We're totally, yep, we're going to make a magical moon child. I'm not just sleeping with 19-year-old girls. Had this weirdness, is he? Is he not? I don't know.
I don't know either. And I think, you know, like you, I think probably both.
Yeah, I think he was too complicated a person that some part of him totally believed all of this. And some other part of him was like, this is a complete scam and I'm pulling it on myself.
And maybe that was even part of the mysticism as well, the sort of, you know, Discordian, chaotic kind of aspect to it.
Exactly.
I wonder if that's just the case for a lot of people that are trying to kind of take advantage using those kinds of skills, you know, those don't look behind the curtain skills.
Sure.
You know? And maybe just the sense of entitlement makes them believe it more than they really do believe in the hoo-ha up in the sky. Do you know what I mean?
Could be.
It is something I often think about when I look at extremists, especially powerful ones. Do they believe in what they're saying, you know, whether it's Jewish space lasers or, you know, trans people cause stomach cancer or.
Sure.
I mean, like, do flat earthers really believe that the earth is flat, or has that become kind of a metaphor for just being anti-science?
And where does, you know, where's the threshold for true believer?
Right.
And I think we'll end on that question, guys. I'm going to tally up the scores here.
Oh, okay.
But this has been a blast. Let's take a look at this. Going into
this
round
is the best
three.
Saturday night, this Gen X is having a long time.
Now I've got to go home and take my liniments.
That's right. My feet hurt.
I got to put on the Pixies and take my Pepto.
I love the cranberries.
Oh, they don't agree with me.
Oh.
So going into this round,
yes,
Heather was leading Dan 38-33.
But you were nipping at my heels. Yeah,
I was. Heel nipping.
And at the end of that round, Dan, you received 25 points, bringing up to 58. A wonderful score. However, it was not enough to top Heather's 30 points. She has 68 and is this week's winner. Congratulations, Heather. Okay, she doesn't talk to Captain Crunch. You just let me know what flavor you want.
Yes.
Okay, with the crunch berries. Awesome.
Lord it around the neighborhood.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Wait What. Congrats again to this week's winner, Heather. Wait What was hosted and written and researched by me, Phil Ahrensberg. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Heather Walbert-Gowron and Dan Love. Have you back on real soon. And then for all of you, tune in next week when we'll sit down again for another feast of weirdness, stuffing our faces with knowledge at the all-you-can-eat buffet of history. Please do you all the podcast things, comment, share, and talk about it on your socials. Thanks so much, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Wait What is hosted, written, and researched by me, Phil Ahrensberg. The show is edited by Dern Gleaves, and our music is by Wesley Devine.